Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Since President Trump made his announcement last week about the new tariffs and called the day Liberation Day for America, and the stock market plummeted, and his political opponents are now using this to accuse Trump of wrongdoing, this week I'd like to talk about tariffs. I've always been pro-tariff and anti-free trade. Back in 2010, when I started this program, program number 21 was all about the errors of free trade and trade deficits. When I was at Rutgers Graduate School of Business back in the 1980s, I would argue against free trade with my fellow students and professors. In 1980s, pro-free trade theories were all the rage. Even Ronald Reagan gave a pro-free trade speech claiming that tariffs make companies at home lazy and uncompetitive. But Reagan was a Hollywood actor, not an economist. Reagan was following the economics of Arthur Laffer. I've studied all of the formulas that quantify free trade. That if one country is good at making one product, such as cheese, and another country is good at making another product, such as cameras, if they trade freely, everyone's wealth is increased. However, what these formulas don't take into consideration is the moral component. Free trade formulas see the market, the forces in the market, as ethical themselves. Whatever produces wealth is right. As in Micah chapter 2, the error that might makes right. Micah chapter 2, woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it's in the power of their hands. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them away. They rob a man of his house and a man of his inheritance. Hey, if I can do it, it must be right. I mean, the market's going to work it all out. We see the same lesson in the New Testament book of James. James chapter 5, verse 4, behold the pay of the laborers who mow your fields, and which has been withheld by you, cries out against you. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. You have lived luxurious on the earth and have led a life of want and pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. See, a laissez-faire capitalist would see that situation and say, well, how could these owners be holding back wages from the laborers? It was an agreed-upon wage, and if the workers didn't like it, well, they can go work somewhere else. As if market forces will solve any inequity. It's like Michael Douglas's Greed is Good speech in the movie Wall Street. Often economists conclude that a transaction must be fine if mathematically it results in more money. Yet people don't see it that way in regard to most transactions. But when it comes to free trade, you know, ethics and man's propensity to do evil is often ignored. You know, I'm just trying to establish the baseline that economic policy should be based on something beyond financial gain, because often what people think is gain is actually the selling of the store, sacrificing the long term on the altar of the immediate. Now, the first key text in regard to free trade and trade deficits is Deuteronomy chapter 28, the curse that will come upon the nation that does not obey the law of God. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 15. But it shall come about if you do not obey the Lord your God to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, which I charge you today, that all of these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Verse 43. The alien who is among you, or rather even the foreign nation that surrounds you, shall rise above you higher and higher, but you will go down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you will not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you will be the tail. And then notice in verse 46 what all this means. they shall become a sign and a wonder on you and your descendants forever, because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and a glad heart for the abundance of all things. In other words, a national debt problem, a trade deficit problem, is a result of a spiritual problem. In departing from God, the people become greedy and lazy, and then they fall for harmful economic theories that become the occasion by which the people sell a nation out. The prodigal son in Luke chapter 15 squandered his family's wealth in a distant country. The prodigal son, by transferring his wealth to that other country, was in effect running a trade deficit, and he ended up in poverty. Luke chapter 15, verse 13, not many days after, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. Oh, there were market forces and there were economic choices, but they weren't right. Now, economic models say that if people trade freely, they will trade to their own economic benefit. But since people are moral creatures, this is the way free trade most often works out. Take, for example, two families, the Hatfields and McCoys. The Hatfields make dairy products, and the McCoys, let's say they make meat products and grain. So they mutually trade and all is well, but the McCoy boys begin to grow lazy, and so they start spending their accumulated wealth on having the Hatfields make for them what they used to make for themselves. And so life gets easier for the McCoys. But that's no problem. The McCoys still make some stuff, and eventually the Hatfields have to spend their McCoy money that they have earned from the McCoys on McCoy products. After all, what else are the Hatfields going to do with McCoy currency? But the Hatfields are smart. They don't buy McCoy products. They buy McCoy land. And they buy McCoy businesses and markets and their tractors. And they use McCoy money to lend back to the McCoys so that they can buy more products from the Hatfields. And the McCoy sons, being lazy, are thinking only in terms of the short term. Continuing to buy cheap products from the Hatfields, even going into debt to do so, in order that they don't have to make the products themselves. The Hatfields are not engaging in free trade. They're engaging in predatory business practices. They're looking out for themselves. They want their family to succeed. They want to be on top, and they want the McCoys to be on bottom. The Hatfields would be analogous to the Deuteronomy chapter 28 foreigners who rise higher and higher while the McCoys go down lower and lower. The McCoys end up in poverty and debt. And Proverbs chapter 22, verse 7, the rich rule over the poor and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. And that's what free trade is today. And reality defies all of the free trade economic theories and formulas, because those free trade economic theories and formulas do not take into consideration the moral aspects of man's behavior. Plus, they don't take into consideration God's institution of the nation, which we will discuss in a moment. The U.S. annual trade deficit is about $1.2 trillion. That's the difference between what we buy from abroad and what we sell. The trade deficit represents the transfer of $1.2 trillion of U.S. money and obligations to foreign countries. Currency is basically a certificate that says I owe you a certain amount of services or product. Now, that would be no problem if these countries would then take their money and buy our products, but instead they buy our companies and they lend us the money to service our debt so we can buy more of their products. And because of American greed, we not only have a $2 trillion a year federal budget deficit, where we are $36 trillion in debt, we also have an annual $1.2 trillion trade deficit, which is par for the course. And this has to stop, because no country can continue for very long doing this without collapsing economically, just like ancient Rome collapsed. The end is coming soon, and Trump's tariffs are an attempt to postpone the inevitable. Now, because much of the public has their heads in the sand, they're critical of the tariffs. They don't realize what's happening in America economically. They don't realize what's been hidden from the American people. Because politicians, they want to keep the public happy. They want to kick the can down the road. The public wants the permissive parent. The parent who gives out gifts. The parent who takes them to Disneyland every year. They don't want the disciplined parent who teaches work and self-denial and sacrifice. And the more ungodly the citizenship becomes, the more the citizenship is attracted to the permissive parent. And by this, they bring judgment down upon their own heads. Now, there's much to be said about all of these new tariffs, and it's difficult to organize all of the issues. But let me just list 8 points to discern in regard to tariffs. First, the opposition to Trump's tariffs is disgusting. It's hypocritical. It's evil. The Democrats and those infected with TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, are using these tariffs as a way to indict the Trump administration, because for them, Trump cannot be successful. Because if he is, the Democrat Party is history. So they must use every possible piece of good news and bad news against Trump. But we actually have on record Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden, and many other Democrats saying the exact same things about the need for tariffs that Trump is now saying. So watch this clip.
How far does China have to go? How much more repression? How big a trade deficit and loss of jobs for the American worker? And how much more dangerous proliferation has to exist before members of this House of Representatives will say, I will not endorse the status quo? As I mentioned, it's about jobs, proliferation, and human rights. And there are those who say we shouldn't link human rights and trade and proliferation and trade. I disagree. But if we just want to take up this issue on the basis of economics alone, indeed, China should not receive most favored nation status for several reasons that I'd like to go into now.
2 weeks ago, I created a trade enforcement union to aggressively investigate any unfair trade practices taking place anywhere in the world. And as they ramp up their efforts, our competitors should be on notice. You will not get away with skirting the rules. I just signed a bill to help American companies that are facing unfair foreign competition. These companies employ tens of thousands of Americans in nearly 40 states. And because of subsidies from foreign governments, some of their foreign competitors are selling products at an artificially low price. That needs to stop. This morning, we're taking an additional step forward. We're bringing a new trade case against China, and we're being joined by Japan and some of our European allies. We want our companies building those products right here in America. But to do that, American manufacturers need to have access to rare earth materials, which China supplies. Now, if China would simply let the market work on its own, we'd have no objections. But their policies currently are preventing that from happening. And they go against the very rules that China agreed to follow. We're going to make sure that this isn't a country that's just known for what we consume. America needs to get back to doing what it's always done best. A country that builds and sells products all over the world that are stamped with the proud words, Made in America. That's how we create good middle-class jobs at home, and that's how we're going to create an economy that's built to last.
I'm announcing today 25% tariff on Chinese steel and aluminum products, and we'll counter China's overcapacity in these industries. And we're making major investments in clean American steel and aluminum. Clean American steel and aluminum. It's a big deal. clean because of the way we manufacture it here. It emits half as much carbon as steel made in China. A 100% tariff on electric vehicles made in China. People say, wow. Because we're not going to let China flood our market, making it impossible for American auto manufacturers to compete fairly. We're also implementing a 25% tariff on electric vehicle batteries from China and a 25% tariff on critical minerals that make those batteries. Folks, look, I'm determined that the future of electric vehicles will be made in America by union workers.
But now that Trump is saying the exact same thing, it's evil, it produces uncertainty, it's chaos, it's going to ruin the economy, it's going to create inflation. Don't believe all this rhetoric against the tariffs. They are liars. And if the Democrats ever get back into power in Washington, they will not drop the tariffs. Just like Biden didn't drop the tariffs that Trump enforced in his first term. Because the Democrats love the billions of dollars it brings into the federal treasury. And they realize it's a much better way to take care of the deficit problem than to raise taxes on corporations at home. Here's an ABC News article from 4 years ago entitled, Biden once slammed Trump's China tariffs. Now he's building on them. So the lesson is that Biden and Democrats only criticized the tariffs in the past because it was Trump. And now they're doing the same thing today. So the second point of discernment is this idea of globalism. Free trade is based on a globalism worldview, not a biblical nation-state worldview. See, the illustration that is used for free trade is that if your neighbor makes shoes and you're an electrician, you trade with each other for mutual benefit. The shoemaker does what he does best. He doesn't need to be an electrician. He doesn't need to be a plumber. He doesn't need to be a car mechanic. He doesn't need to be a doctor. Mutual trade always benefits everyone locally. So also internationally. I mean, who could dispute that? Well, that's true when it comes to individual families in a local situation. But when it comes to nations, nations are large enough to be diverse and can be self-sufficient and should be self-sufficient. Nations need to keep the wealth at home for the sake of national security and for national prosperity. Just like groups of families may trade together to keep the wealth in the clan. Only those who see the world as one big unit with no need for nations believe it doesn't matter who makes what. Just last week, the Prime Minister of the UK knew exactly what these tariffs meant. He said, quote, globalization is now over. Number three, the issue or the solution is being presented as reciprocal tariffs. We can drop our tariffs if these countries will drop their tariffs. And the American people are shocked to discover how many tariffs these other countries put on American goods, and yet they expect us to take their products without any tariffs. However, even if there are new tariffs, these tariffs need to continue even if these other countries drop their tariffs. Because the issue is the trade deficit, not just the tariffs. This week, Trump explained this. Trump is not dropping the 54% tariff on Chinese goods unless the trade deficit is solved. And by the way, the reason economists today have no issues with countries charging us enormous tariffs, even though we don't charge them, is because according to free trade theories, when you put tariffs on incoming products, you're only hurting yourself. You're making your own people pay more. You're impoverishing your own country. And you're only reducing your own national wealth. But in practice, countries with tariffs can actually become very wealthy. Number four, Why the drop in the stock market? Well, according to Nike, it cost them about $18 to make an Air Force One sneaker in Vietnam. That's what they say. I would imagine it even costs less. But they sell it in America for $115. The tariffs mean that it'll cost them another $6 to make it overseas, and that's going to cut into Nike profits. So the stock price drops. You know, once slavery ended in the South, the plantations had to pay wages, which was a drop in profits for the plantations. But don't feel sorry for the plantations. And notice in that case, the profits just didn't disappear. The workers themselves started receiving the profits. And this brings me to point number five, the benefit of tariffs. Tariffs tend to move profits away from the owner leisure class and toward the actual working class. Those who do the work and produce the products are more rewarded for their labor. You know, consumers want cheap products, so they're willing to have slaves make products for them. But now they have to pay the true price of the labor. Here's an article. Tariffs restore dignity to working class. And plus, workers don't have to compete against slave labor. You know, the minimum wage in China is about $1.30 an hour, about $2,600 a year. Now, there are reasons for this, which includes China deliberately keeping their currency low compared to the value of the dollar in order to steal U.S. manufacturing. Plus, this is communist slave labor. But the point is, Americans cannot compete with $1.30 per hour. Businesses can no longer make products in America and compete with $1.30. If you don't manufacture in China and ship it into America, you are going to go out of business. And the shipping cost is minuscule. I believe it comes to like 10 cents for every sneaker you ship. So actually, the tariffs on goods coming from China need to be more like 400%. And when labor is so cheap overseas, people in America lose all incentives to start businesses because there's no money in manufacturing. So a great benefit of tariffs is that it rewards the American worker and it creates new businesses at home. I'm pro-tariff because I care about workers, that they're treated justly for their work. And wealth actually comes by producing, not by consuming. Now, with all of these new tariffs, billions are now being invested in America already. And even the executives at Ford said this week that the tariffs will actually benefit the company in the long term. You know, fortunately for Ford, they didn't sell out completely and 80% of their vehicles are still made in the United States. But that wouldn't continue much longer if it weren't for tariffs. And if you look at the effect of Trump's tariffs during his first term, it was all positive. It reduced imports from China. It saved American steel producers. It grew the American economy by billions, and it did not create inflation. And that brings me to my next point, the claim that tariffs will mean inflation. But long term, tariffs can actually bring down inflation. And the proof is that China has some of the highest tariffs in the world, but also has the lowest prices. Why? It doesn't make sense. You think tariffs are going to protect their businesses at home so the businesses can raise prices. But what actually happens in reality is that there is so much production at home. There's so much of a glut of products that it reduces prices at home. The people in China have no shortage of sneakers. And even in the short term, tariff policies will not hurt the American family because there's also going to be lower prices on energy, which we do at home, lower prices for groceries, the coming drop in mortgage rates. There will be lower prices at the pumps. And that will more than compensate for the few extra dollars that families have to spend on foreign goods. The premier of China said last week, protectionism leads nowhere. And of course, he is lying to the American media for the sake of propaganda, because he knows protectionism and tariffs protected Chinese manufacturers and turned China into an economic powerhouse. So that now China doesn't even need our products, just like we shouldn't need their products. Point number 7, revenue, debt, and bankruptcy. As I mentioned earlier, we need to end this trade deficit or America will lose all manufacturing and go bankrupt. And I hope you know that before America passed the income tax in 1913, our federal government was totally supported by tariffs. And this protected American businesses. So we had the Industrial Revolution here in America. Apart from tariffs, the Industrial Revolution in America wouldn't have been much of a revolution at all. The tariffs that Trump has implemented will also bring in about $600 billion in new federal revenue. And with the cuts that Doge is making, Trump may be able to do what no other president has been able to do, balance the budget, where federal income equals federal expenses. And the only way to do this is through tariffs. The country is borrowing like there's no tomorrow. And we're not at war. This is a time of peace. But there will be a tomorrow and there will be a payday someday. Tariffs are, in a sense, a consumption tax. But it's really a tax that helps businesses. It's a win-win situation. But you say, wait a minute. What about those poor workers in those foreign countries? They're going to lose their jobs making trinkets for our dollar stores. Well, understand that these workers will actually be better off. Rather than making junk for America, their labor can be put toward building things for themselves, not being slave labor for their government agenda. Finally, point number 8, Trump's role in all this. Listen to this interview with Trump back in the 1980s on Oprah. And even back then, he gives his view on American trade.
I had a full page ad in major U.S. newspapers last year criticizing U.S. foreign policy. What would you do differently, Donald?
It's a joke. I'd make our allies, forgetting about the enemies you can't talk to so easily. I'd make our allies pay their fair share. We're a debtor nation. Something's going to happen over the next number of years with this country, because you can't keep going on losing $200 billion, and yet we let Japan come in and dump everything right into our markets and everything. It's not free trade. If you ever go to Japan right now and try to sell something, forget about it, Oprah. Just forget about it. It's almost impossible. They don't have laws against it. They just make it impossible. They come over here, they sell their cars, their VCRs, they knock the hell out of our companies. And hey, I have tremendous respect for the Japanese people. I mean, you can respect somebody that's beating the hell out of you, but they are beating the hell out of this country. Kuwait, they live like kings. The poorest person in Kuwait, they live like kings. And yet they're not paying. We make it possible for them to sell their oil. Why aren't they paying us 25% of what they're making? It's a joke.
Now also listen to this short introductory clip from Trump's speech last week.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day. Waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Gonna make it wealthy, good and wealthy. For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike. American steel workers, auto workers, farmers, and skilled craftsmen, we have a lot of them here with us today. They really suffered gravely. They watched in anguish as foreign leaders have stolen our jobs, foreign cheaters have ransacked our factories, and foreign scavengers have torn apart our once beautiful American dream. Our country and its taxpayers have been ripped off for more than 50 years, but it is not going to happen anymore. It's not going to happen.
So if you get a chance, I encourage you to listen to the whole speech. Most of Trump's critics haven't even listened to the points he makes. But here's a question. If the curse in Deuteronomy is what comes upon a nation that abandons God and ignores his moral law so that it becomes deceived by lies, economic lies, and these lies become the occasion by which the nation destroys itself, how is it that someone like Trump comes along and offers America a way out? That someone like Trump comes along and exposes the economic lies. He begins to talk common sense to a people who have lost their common sense. Well, I see in the Trump administration a similarity to the few good kings in ancient Israel, where God, through those kings, offered the people an alternative, a choice, not to go down the wrong path. So it's up to the American people whether to do what's right economically to save the country, or whether their overall immorality and their hatred of good and their hatred of Christian values causes them to reject the help. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 14. There was a small city with few men in it, and a great king came to it, surrounded it, and constructed large siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor wise man, and he delivered the city by his wisdom, yet no one remembered that poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heeded. The moral of the story is verse 18. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. When people are given over to darkness, they never appreciate the help that God sends. In conclusion, after having said all this about U.S. economic policy, the response from some might be, why would Christians have anything to do with the things of this world? 2 Corinthians 6:14, what fellowship is there between light and darkness? 1 John chapter 2, verse 17, the world is passing away. Matthew 6:19, we're not to lay up for ourselves treasures upon earth. Matthew 6:24, you cannot serve God in wealth. 1 Corinthians 7:30, those who buy as if they did not possess. 2 Peter chapter 3, it's all going up in flames anyway. Or Habakkuk chapter 2 verse 13, is it not indeed from the Lord of hosts that the people toil for fire and the nations grow weary for nothing? By focusing on earthly wealth, aren't we just polishing the doorknobs on the sinking Titanic? And it's the unsaved people of the world who in the apocalypse are going to be buying and selling. Luke chapter 17. And in Revelation chapter 18, verse 13, it's Mystery Babylon and the merchants of the earth that are weeping when they cannot buy or sell. They weep because they can no longer buy spice and perfume and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and cargoes of horses and chariots and slaves and human lives. And what's our message to this world? How to manage money on earth better? Or the coming kingdom of Christ? So be gone with all of this talk about worldly success and money. Why make America great again? The kingdom of God should be made great. And I can appreciate that emphasis if the pendulum has swung too far in the direction of earthly wealth. Some Christians probably need a kick in the pants if they place all of the emphasis on this world and ignore the gospel. But there is a ditch on that side of the road, a sort of monasticism that doesn't care about justice on earth, economic or otherwise. And it's really not an either-or situation. We can do both. We can help the kingdoms of men and yet advance and recruit from the kingdom of Christ. In preaching the gospel, we're to do good to all men. We're to help the poor and the oppressed. We're to seek justice for the disadvantaged workers, as mentioned in James chapter 5. Galatians 2:10, we're to remember the poor. And we're to convict the world of its sin by pointing out the sins of Babylon. The trafficking in human lives and the economic greed and the corruption. In all this, just don't forget to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because what will it gain a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? One can have great economic policy, even biblical economic policy, and still go to hell. So let's share with the world God's economic laws, but for the purpose of pointing people to the work and the person of the Lord Jesus Christ. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below. Be a student of the word so that you may be a wise and discerning ambassador of Christ. And may Jesus Christ reign.